from PRX.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and friends beyond the binary, it's time for the podcaster with the creaky dulcet tones. That's D-U-L-C-E-T, maybe. I think you figure out creaky and dulcet. Pointless meanders, those are coming up too, because it's time for Sleep With Me, the podcast that puts you to sleep. And if you could pay attention, if you're a regular listener through the credits, or when your hand hits the fridge tomorrow, this is how we keep the show going. Go to sleepwithmepodcast.com/sponsors. Thanks. Hey, everybody, this is Scoots, and this is where I talk about Sleep With Me Plus and supporting the show. I'm going to try to do this one pretty fast with a couple questions. This only goes out if you're a regular listener to Sleep With Me. So if you're new or the show's just something you listen to every once in a while, this is not important, really. But if you're a regular listener, the question is, does Sleep With Me help you at all, right? Does it help you in a unique way, like help you fall asleep or break up the thoughts or ease of loneliness in the deep, dark night? Distract you from physical sensations, whatever, does it do anything for you? And does the sleep you get or the relief you get make your life any better? And if the answers to those questions are yes, and you can afford to support the show, this is a time when I'm really asking people, hey, what would it be worth to you if we stopped making Sleep With Me? Like, would you pay to get it back? Like, you'd say, if Sleep With Me does make your life better by helping you get to sleep, or it does help you in the deep, dark night feel less alone, or you just like it, and we stopped making it, I said, hey, would you pay for to get back? Like, how much would sleeping be worth to you? Say, hey, let's restart it. Let me put a quarter in the machine. What it does for you be worth to you to say, hey, I really want to get that back? And if the answer is like, hey, yeah, it would be worth $20 to me, or it'd be worth $50 to me, think about supporting the show at Sleep With Me Plus. Even, I mean, obviously, most people support it much less than that, because the show could really use your support right now, and we never have to cross that threshold. So if the show does something for you in a unique way, you like the podcast, and you can afford to support it, just don't wait. Sign up for Sleep With Me Plus, sleepwithmepodcast.com/plus, sleepwithmepodcast.com/plus. That's sleepwithmepodcast.com/plus. Thanks, everybody. Hey, everybody. I just want to check in with you about our live shows. If you're ever wondering what appearances I'm doing, you could go to sleepwithmepodcast.com/live show. On the second Wednesday every month, I'm always here locally in Alameda, California, doing a show at 8 p.m. But I'm also going to be at PodX from May 31st to June 2nd, 2019 in the heart of Nashville at the Music City Center. On social media, you could go to @thePodX for programming teases, times, and stuff like that. We're going to be doing a live show. There'll be a bunch of other stuff there. And you could get tickets at podx.com/sleep. You'll get 10% off any ticket type. And you can keep an eye on the schedule for when the live show is going to be and when the appearances are going to be, but go to podx.com/sleep and check it out. Thanks, everybody. I'll see you soon. Mystery Bard, who helps out on the show? A lot of people work very hard keeping this show going. Who are they?
Chris Posty Posterson.
Sounds like a near fall.
Wrote the theme song.
Edits episodes too.
Carl W. The Legend.
Also edits episodes.
Kenny, Scotty, and Jennifer.
Runner, 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 runner. Eric and the team at Astound are on the website.
I am the mystery bard.
I do the lullabies, yeah.
I do commissions at
JonathanMann.net.
I'll write a song for you.
Any reason at all.
You can tell me the story and
I'll make it personal.
You see the kindness shine straight on through when the listeners form their own Facebook group. Keith, Stacy, Sarah, Laura, Julie, and Jennifer. These are your moderators.
Get support, dear Scooter, on Patreon. Buy the merch and support the sponsors. You can find anything you want at sleepwithmepodcast.com.
And we're so proud that we could dance to be part of Nine Vale Presents. So now on with the show.
Thanks, Mr. Bard. I'm at Dear Scooter on Twitter and Instagram. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast newsletter, sleepwithmepodcast.com/newsletter. It'll just keep you up to date on stuff. I believe that's it. What do you say? We get on with the show. Hey, are you up all night tossing, turning, mind racing, trouble getting to sleep, trouble staying asleep? Well, welcome. This is Sleep With Me, the podcast that puts you to sleep. We do it as a bedtime story. All you need to do is get in bed, turn out the lights, and press play. I'm going to do the rest. What I'm going to attempt to do is create a safe place where you could set aside whatever's keeping you awake, whether it's thoughts, feelings, you know, feelings like emotions, physical sensations, if you had a change in schedule or time or temperature, whatever's keeping you awake, I'd like to take your mind off. I'd like to acknowledge it could be anything, but it's legitimate. There's a lot of people that listen to the show, and I don't know what everybody's going through, but I can relate. I know how it feels there in the deep, dark night. And I like to keep you company. That's basically the gist of the show. What I'm going to do is I'm going to send my voice across the deep, dark night. I'm going to use lulling, soothing, creaky, dulcet tones, pointless meanders, superfluous tangents, extra stuff, so many extra words. This is the one podcast where you'd say, it could be 5 minutes, but there's so many bonus words in extra words. It's kind of like, this could be a metaphor, is when you go to that, the big chain sandwich shop, though there's other chain sandwich shops now, and other things built on that model. Maybe we'll talk about that as a metaphor for the podcast. If you're new, though, welcome. Here's a couple things. This show's different. Give it a few tries to see if it works for you. Structurally, the show starts off with business. That's how we keep it free. Then there's an intro. Intro's about 12 minutes. As you get through listening your first, second, third time, you'll see kind of the intro's a big part of the show. Everybody uses the show and the intro in a different way. But the majority of listeners, they kind of wind down as the intro's going, get ready for bed. It kind of just gives you a... Maybe I've never explained this. People always say... The intro kind of developed into a 12 to 16 minute thing over time based on listener feedback. Part of me when I first started the show or times it's like, oh, it'd be cool if it went straight into the story. But then if you go straight into the story, then you're expected to kind of, it kind of doesn't help with the easing into bedtime, which is what kind of seems like it actually works, the drifting off to sleep, where I don't want anything to feel rushed. I want to give you room, and there is the fact that you could skip ahead. Normally, it's around 18 minutes or so, and get close to the beginning of the story and start listening in there. But there's also this idea that it's like, I'm glad you're here. Like one thing I've been learning is I'm becoming more of an adult and trying to live more fully in this world. It's really important how you greet people. I don't tend to be the most enthusiastic person. But I'm tending to notice the importance of enthusiasm. If you're glad to see someone, letting that out and expressing it is a powerful thing. And it's a powerful thing to feel that in the other direction and be like, I'm really so glad to see you. Sometimes there's an unintentional metacommunication going on there. So greeting people in a way is equal to your feelings. Sometimes you might be like, hey, how you doing? Because you mean it. I don't know, but with me, I tend to do, if I'm distracted and thinking about something else, worrying about filing papers or whatever, and then I'm greeting someone, it might dampen down my natural enthusiasm for seeing them. And that's kind of what the intro is in some paradoxical way. It is a dampened down. It's I have such enthusiasm that you're here and that I get to try to put you to sleep. But at the same time, the paradoxical arc is that it realistically, I want to give you plenty of room to fall asleep. But at the same time, I want you to know that I really, truly am glad you're here and that I'm trying to establish this as a safe place where you could set aside whatever's keeping you awake. So I think that's kind of the... Oh, so if you're new, yeah, the show starts off with the intro, really 12 minutes to 14 minutes part of the show. And then we'll be talking about, welcome back to GOT. We'll be talking about season one of GOT, or episode one, season, I don't know, is this season seven? I'm not sure, because I'm recording this before the episode comes out to be ready. But so I'm glad you're here. I'm glad GOT's back. And you might say, well, I don't watch that show. Yeah, no problem. It'll be a pretty tangential recap of the episode and things that came up during the episode. It'll also be through the lens of Sleep With Me. So it'll be very calming and soothing and meandering. And, you know, for the most part, the feedback I get is that, wait a second, you were talking about, that's what you were talking about? I thought you were talking about the difference between gravies. Huh? Really? That was about season six, episode eight. Actually, I don't think there were eight episodes in season six. I don't think so, though. So possibly I could have been talking about an episode that doesn't exist. That is possible. So, we'll talk about Game of Thrones. These episodes are supersized. They just happen to be, again, something that grew out of listener feedback and just making the show. So the Game of Thrones episodes, we'll talk about the episode. If we have time, we'll talk about things that came up in the episode. Like, let's just say, for example, yeah, there was something about gravy. I'd say, well, according to this, gravy must contain these things. Or, you know, Alton Brown's philosophy of gravy, this is imaginary, though I'm sure Alton Brown has it. Is it Elton Brown or Alton Brown? What about, wonder if Alton Brown likes Elton John. Also, they could open up like any kind of business where you have people's names, or like a publisher. Alton John Elton Brown, maybe. So where was I? I was talking about, so we'll talk about the episode, then things that came up during the episode. Then we'll check in with Tom and Pounce. They have a fictional series they're going to introduce, a short fictional series, like influenced by old time radio. Then we'll check in with prayers to the old gods and the new. And I think that'll be it. That'll be how we do it. I don't have a release schedule yet because I'm still, as I'm preparing for the season to start, trying to decide if we're going to go every week or we're going to spread it out. So we have that going. I think that's the structure of the show. Also, if you're new, here's a couple of things. You don't need to listen to this podcast. You may have figured that out already. You can listen, but you could also turn it down low. You could put it on the other side of the room. Just kind of see what works for you as you start to use the show. This show is also no pressure to fall asleep. I'm going to be here over an hour for these Game of Thrones episodes. And the whole idea of the show is I'm here to keep you company as you drift off, to walk at your side as you fall asleep. Not so much to put you to sleep, but to be your boyfriend, your boar companion, your boar bay, your boar cuz, your boar sib. If you're from San Diego, your boar bra. To keep you to be here as you drift off, to take your mind off of stuff. And yeah, use a bunch of different things, like kind of like if you're going to that sub shop and you say, okay, if we're viewing it through a neutral lens, you'd say, okay, well, I want some of those, you know, that. They say, okay, what about the squirty stuff? Oh, yeah, use the one, that purple squirty stuff. Yeah, I'd like some of that. You could choose your type of, what do they call it? A conduit? I'm trying not to talk about FOD directly, even though I am. The delivery system for it, the structural, the thing that offers it, the structural integrity, squirty stuff. You got your building block or whatever, your construction material. I don't know what you call that, exterior. I guess that's more of the, I don't know, your foundation. Oh, no. So, see, even that, I say, well, Scoots was going to describe it to us, but then he kind of got distracted, went off topic, because he was trying to, that's how kind of I talk about Game of Thrones, too. So, you get the, you know, the feature material, we'll call it. And then you have the stuff that goes on it. Like you got your stuccos, your paint, your accoutrement, I think they say, they don't say it there. They say, you want these with that? You want to make it a value pack or whatever? You say, well, I'm here. What can you go through the accoutrement again? And they even would say, sir, there's a long line here. You see, what do you call that, a conduit, or is that the delivery vessel? You want that warm or cold? And then I usually, anytime someone says that, I say, it's cold as, you know, warm hands, cold, warm heart, cold hands, they say. And it was strange they can hear artists, but you're an artiste, you don't have accoutrement. Well, this is only entertaining in a sleep podcast, but you say, buddy, give me a break. I say, you're right. I apologize. But then you also, once you go through that part, then you still have lots of others. You say, well, I want some of that stuff. Put some of that on there. Oh yeah, dust it up. I want some of that dust. So it gives you a lot of choices. In this show, you can kind of listen any way you want. Cause sometimes my words feel to a lot of people that listen unrelated to anything I'm saying or any points I'm making. And to someone, you know, that specializes in amuse-bouche and accoutrement, they might say, you can't have that with that. It's just not. I say, well, anyway, whom are we to judge? They're artists. So I don't know if I had a point in there other than I'm here to take your mind off of stuff. And I'm here to keep you company. I want you to get a chance to get a good night's sleep so you can be out there in the world flourishing. I truly believe you deserve a good night's sleep. I want you to believe that too, even if it's a little bit out of our grasp at times. And, you know, just take a breath with me. I'm here to help. Now, this show doesn't work for everybody, as I kind of said, so give it a few tries. If it doesn't work for you, or you feel your lizard brain, you know, saying, stuff, sleepwithmepodcast.com/nothankyou. It has links to other sleep stuff, a couple other options. So check that out. And I think that's it. I just want to help you fall asleep. I've been there. That's the main thing out there in the deep, dark night. And I want to keep you company, take your mind off it, unless, you know, make it less of a rigmarole. Most of all, I really appreciate you checking the show out, and I appreciate your time. And just so you know, I do strive and yearn, and I really want to help you fall asleep. Here's a couple of ways we keep the show going. Sleep With Me is brought to you by Progressive, where customers who save by switching their home and car save nearly $800 on average. Quote at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary. All right, everybody, here we are talking episode one, season eight, episode one. We're back. Season eight, episode one, called Winterfell, where most of the action takes place. And there's a kind of a new open. I'm going to start it right here. We're getting the end of the recap with the wall looking like a wave. And here we go. It starts off with like a new scene on the band, or maybe I just never noticed. I couldn't figure it out. I'm going to try to pause it live. Okay. Yeah, we do have a new scene, and I haven't been paying attention. So it does look like it's the, ice draggy poo, icing the wall possibly. And then the walkers, and then maybe the left side. I can't really tell. Some birds, I don't know. You'll be able to check it, like every review of the episode. I don't check those because I don't want to get in the way. And it looks like a wood, like it looks brass in the, but when it's paused, actually it looks like it's carved wood with gold paint. So it starts with this, that's like with the astroglobe. Then we go through the wall, like a zooming shot through the you in the wall. Then we have these like Scrabble pieces folding that look like it's winter. And we go to Last Hearth, then the Scrabble pieces fold, and we sweep to Winterfell. I guess that's the road. I just realized that just now, maybe. And we see the big tree in Winterfell, a pond that I just noticed for the first time. Even the tree even has a face. Then we go through Winterfell on the inside and downstairs to Winterfell. This is all in the opening, like the creating of this clockwork action. Very, very cool. Okay, oh boy, hold on. I got to pause it again. It's Scooch, by the way. Welcome back, season 8. Good to have you. What do you say? Okay, so the second scene, yeah, this one confused me. And I guess it's, oh no, now it makes a little more sense. So not quite. It's a scene, oh, is that Walder Frey? I guess it is the towers, or whatever that Walder Frey place is, maybe. And on the left side of the band, we see a lion, maybe, or is a wolf, Wolfie Pooh. Then an unknown shape. That's a Wolfie Pooh going bye-bye. And then someone holding it, like, so there's stuff, that looks like it's from the Twins. That's what that place was called. So I don't know if that's a hint. Then we go down to King's Landing. And King's Landing's coming back together. We go through the city. Then we go to the Red Keep. Really looking like a nice teak wood action. We go down the stairs from the tower in the Red Keep through where they're practicing with that the thing to catch the draggy poos. Then into the throne room, we even get the Iron Throne, Lannister sigil. And then we see the last band we see. I knew this one. It has Comet. And I said, was the Comet in the movie, TV show, or just a book? Or was that like in another story that I was just imagining, like a red comet? Was that, I think that was in one of the seasons of Game of Thrones. I know it was in the book. But that's a red comet, and then four flying friends, then some activity. I'm pretty sure 1, 2, 3, 4. I don't know if that's a hint or not, or history that, and then the episode opens. Let's see, Lost Hearth. These are my notes. I was just watching. New bank shot. Oh, this is all my notes. Last Bark Comet. I think that's. But the episode runs with this kid. He's running. Runs through some water. They're running. Actually, this kid's running and. Jump over a wagon, over a stump. This is like a kid from, also this kid is in the next Newsies movie, carrying a news satchel. And Arya's the first friend we see. She's kind of got a smug look, and kind of they talk about it at the end of the episode, Weiss and Benioff, so I'll leave that for your own discovery. In the trees, snow and moss as the kid climbs a tree to watch the Unsullied march into town. There's marching sound effects. Arya looking out, climbs tree. Kid has a newsy satchel. We see the town outside of Winterfell kind of for the first time. And possibly some old walls of Winterfell or something. It could be a pub. There's like a barrel sign. Marching music, lots of troops. And when they do have shirts on, but I said, man, is it cold in that Unsullied armor? And then we have the Khaleesi, your Khaleesi and mine, red gloved, white jacketed, Jon Snow, Arya watching. Cold in that? Arya looks up as Jon, in the Khaleesi pass, she breathes. She almost says something, but then she lets a moment pass and kind of grits herself a little bit uncomfortable. She's got her winter goods on, too. Then we see, like, all the people in Winterfell. Then we see the Hound, and Arya sees the Hound. Hound doesn't see her. And first they put that dude, but his name, I forgot again. The kid blacksmith. Eventually I'll forget it and then I'll remember it. I wanted to say Renly, but that's Renly Baratheon, and that's someone else. I think his name has the same amount of syllables. And we have Tyrion and Varys in a cart. They get the first dialogue. They're cracking jokes. Then we see Grey Worm and Missandei. They're looking at the people looking at them. She exchanges a cool look with the Grey Worm, a WTF look. What up with these northerners? And he just gives her the typical Missandei of Narth look. And then Khaleesi's getting stared at by all the northerners. And Jen says, they're not used to seeing people that with blonde hair or coming in. But the Khaleesi's got dragons on her side. So she's the blank stares, Khaleesi. Oh, was it Mark Hamill? Does anybody, like, know? I didn't look this up, but we have like somebody that looked a bit like Luke Skywalker from Force Awakens. And I didn't know if it was a Mark Hamill cameo. I didn't pause it or anything. So Khaleesi has the dragons in the house a moment. She's pleased and proud. Pleased and proud Khaleesi. Then they do a flyby over Sansa, like Top Gun style. We get an overshot of Winterfell. And Bran looks like he's been hitting the vape or something, man, this episode, because he had Raven is oh so chill now. And I just keep waiting for him to say, dude, man, but he kind of does. He's mellower than a mellow yellow, which isn't very mellow, actually. Like, if a mellow yellow was actually mellow, he'd be mellow. He's the mellowest raven. But John comes in with the Khaleesi. They say hi to Bran. That's like a strange. I don't know what the right word is. Mellow Bran look number one. Khaleesi. He says, you're a man. And he says, almost. And I said, what does that even mean? We're talking, I didn't know what that meant. You see, Brian, you're confusing me, and I'm just watching the show. You know, he's enigmatic, I think. There's lots of mud on the ground. John kisses his head. Brian stares. So it's Brian stare one. Maybe that's the right thing. Brian stare. Brandon Stark stares. I think Khaleesi and Jorah, they go to meet Sansa. Sansa meets Khaleesi. Bear Island, the queen of Bear Island, she's staring. She is not impressed. Neither is Sansa. Like, I forgot who that Olympian was in, 2008? I don't know what year it was that wasn't impressed. But Sansa's unimpressed. And old Bran, bad news Brandon, he says, there's no time to talk or a greeting. He knows everything, all the news you don't want to know. It's meeting time in the meeting hall. They say, Kid Umber, where are you? Where are your peeps? He says, we need a ride. I don't have my license yet. This is the head of the Umbers, Kid Umber. Because I'm like 10. Somebody's got to drive me to go pick up my people. It was also like kind of a thing of like, who's in charge? Sansa's in charge ostensibly, but now is she overrided by Jon Snow and the Khaleesi? Because he says, my lord, my lady, my lord, my queen. And then Bear Island, she quotes Madonna. She says, I've got something to say about it. There's a look like a L-E-W-K. And Sansa, so she says, what's up? John makes one of his world famous or Westerosi famous, as far as the Bear, well beyond Bear Island, his apologetic speeches. There's three challenge, like there's like a lot of candle chandeliers, and his speech doesn't, you know, really do anything. So Tyrion says, "Well, how about if I make a speech?" Also, I noticed the tables they're sitting at were really nice. Holy mackerel! Give me one of those tables. And Tyrion just gives more. Tyrion says, "Let me turn off my charm, and just give you more bad news." Like one of those things where we say, okay, I'm going to tell you how you should feel and then give you more bad news. Because he says the Lannisters are coming to crash, sleepover with all the Lannisters, most of them. Which reminds me to, like, look at a map later. We will do that. Sansa, what about food? Oh, she says, if you're going to have all these sleepovers, you got to have food. Did anybody bring any food with them? Like, she's kind of, like, been and left in charge, and she's like, I went to the grocery store for this amount of people, and now you're rolling in with it. You're saying the Lannisters are coming over, and we know those kids, they eat as much as they want, and they want, you know, they said, is this gourmet popcorn or regular popcorn? Because the Lannister only eats gourmet popcorn, and we don't actually eat it with our hands, you know, we have it, So that's what Sansa says. She gives, there's a Khaleesi look. There's a joke about what do your puppies eat? She says whatever they want. A lot of jokes in this episode. They were well-written jokes, and I don't know what other people wrote about it, but I kind of felt like they said, we're going to put all the comic relief. It wasn't really comic relief, though, because this is a necessary, like, expository place-setting episode. But it felt like they said, well, we gave this good, we got to get everybody one or two good one-liners. And I guess the jokes do give you a sense of like, it's been 18 months. This is the characters I love. So Sansa and Khaleesi joke, Foundry. Oh, what's this kid? Gendry. That's what it looks like, Foundry, but which would make sense, but it's Gendry. Who would work at a foundry? He gets some rocks. Tyrion looks on as he's getting his rocks together. He rolls up on Sansa. He gets this look Lord Breastplate. Remember Lord Breastplate? He's been around for a while. He even knows Tyrion from, like, back in the, whatever that place was called, the place that was actually had, like, the rivers or whatever, River Run. Rivendell? I know that's not here, but I forgot. Maybe it is Rivendell. But that's the Lord Breastplate. He still has his breastplate. Still has the same clothes on. He's very continuity check on Lord Breastplate. Holy cow. And there's some more jokes. Guy will survive is a key kind of theme in this, or we have Tyrion definitely gets some quality lines, but Sansa gets a better burn at the end because it's the truth of truth because she rolls Tyrion and he has nothing to say about it. She says you were played with not even spelled correctly by your sister. Then we get Brandon staring, number two. He's staring at Tyrion. This Esperid John at tree. I don't know what that is. This Esperid says, but John's at the tree. The tree's eyes are closed. Arya's there. At first she's stiff. She's got that arms at her side thing that her predecessor had. Yeah, but then there's a big hug, and I'm not going to, I'll tell you right now, this is the one part of the episode where I teared up. I think when Arya and Sansa's and Bran's reunion, and then this one, or maybe it was Bran and last season, this, I teared up, I got choked up. Because they, like, you know, they actually love one another, and maybe some of the other tension, the familial interpersonal tension that was between all the other characters this episode, you could let your guard down. You see, okay, they still love each other. But Arya says, you know what, usually it's Onion Night, or Mr. Jorah, time for me to do some truth-telling, Jon Snow. Because he actually tries to explain her and Sansa, and she de-explains him mighty quick. She says, and she doesn't even fully de-explain him. She says, there's a lot I don't even need to say, yo, because, like, about how cool and tough I am. But I'll just tell you, Sansa's a lot smarter than any of your peeps. Yeah, so that was one of the high, I mean, that was a high point for me. Yeah, both are emotional. They give another hug, but she says, you know, just remember who's family. And again, that's another thread. But they'll still be family because then we're in King's Landing. Oh boy, is the weather good in King's Landing. And Cersei's out enjoying it. I didn't realize this, but she likes to just stand outside and listen to the bird calls with like 8,000 stormtrooper guards around her for I don't know exactly what reason other than show. And Maester, I forget what his name is. He's not Clegane. I'll think of his name maybe at some point. But he comes in, he says, bad news. And she says, that's good news for me. Yeah, actually, so I'm not worried about it. Trouble at the wall. Then we see all these ships in the bay. We see there's a golden squid, but it has like a red symbol on it, which was from G.I. Joe. Remember, G.I. Joe had the people G.I. Joe was against. I can't say their name on here, but that's also on the sale. And also, let's see, same. There's a dude from Harvard, like 100%. I said that dude went to Harvard. He's seen on one of the ships. Then we see Euron. He goes to see below to make a speech about the Greyjoys and the Queen and how cool he is. And he really got a lot of screen time and dialogue this episode. And I will say this actor must do a great job because I really loathe the. He said, Euron. Yep, all over, please, I'd love to, all over it, because, but he did, makes a speech to, the character's name I forget, and the other character's name I forget, Greyjoy, I almost had it, Theon's sister, I almost had it, also, he does this, like, it feels like he's, like, auditioning. He says, hey, Pirates of the Caribbean, I hear you're putting out one more movie. You know, if you need a lead, I think my audition is done here. You got it. And I would say they probably should. Then we see King's Landing. Sleaze. 2049. Oh, 2049, here's a Queen Cersei, not really a joke, but Queen Cersei's so rich. How rich is he, Scoot? How rich is she, Scoots? Actually, by the way, Scoots, your joke, these things have existed the whole series and not just in this episode. Thanks, how rich is she? So rich, she has heaters for her marble columns. But I guess they've been there the whole time. And I don't know, do they heat the marble column? Or are they just for light? Or, I mean, I said it kind of makes sense. Hot air rises, a warm marble column would radiate heat. But I just, I don't know. So that's how rich Queen Cersei is. She has heaters for marble columns. Small mystery. What was a small mystery and more glamming? I don't know what the small mystery was. Maybe like, oh, that he snuck off, but she wanted elephants. The Golden Company's there. And the dude from the Golden Company, he's the Harvard dude. He looks like one of the Winklevoss twins. Not the actor that played it. Like I said, is that one of the Winklevoss, Winklevi? And it's not against anything. It's just he's striking a Winklevalian pose. I said, I don't know. I just said, okay, that would make sense. The Golden Company, Winklevosses. They said, well, yeah, we're here in acquisitions. We're here to acquire your gold and whatever else we can get. Captain Strickland, even that, you say, okay, you sound like you should be CEO. I've always said, Mr. Strickland, can I speak to you? Yeah, but the Golden Comedy has no elephants. Also, that was my Winklevoss joke, I think. Okay, and then there's a long Euron Circe exchange with one counterpoint. I honestly was trying to make sense of it. This is my fourth watch of it right now. And he says, Circe, is this like, maybe I'm just jealous, but is she playing this dude? Or is it, there's one turning at like a keystone here coming up. She calls him insolent. Is she playing him or looking to forget? She says, okay, let's go hang Netflix and chill like we did in 2015. She shares a look with the maester. So I think something is up, but I'm just not sure. And Blueface is like, no. Then Bron is in Rumor Mill City. They talk about Archie, tall, handsome Will, Ginger Eddie. And then the maester rolls in and he says, break up the good gossip chain here. We got gold. We got the family crossbow. And you're in charge of poetic justice, Bron, or at least the full character arc for 8 seasons. Which will it be? And I don't like to totally predict things, but I did think, I don't know how things are going to turn out for Bron. I mean, come on, dude. Hopefully he makes a choice early so I don't have to wait until the last episode to say, Bron, don't, come on, man. You don't even need, but he is a sellsword. But I do think it's interesting that the name Kingslayer came up for Jaime. And I say, wait a second, that could be a role Jaime may play. In a positive way, if Jaime's going towards redemption. But we'll see. I wanted those elephants. Circe has some killer lines here. I wanted some elephants. I wonder what Euron's breath is like. Not that it matters with his confidence, but she goes, you're not boring. I'll give you that. So there's another reason for me to be jealous. And then I like how she says, now I would like to be alone. And I said, that's what me all the time. I just can't ask. But 28 minutes, you really get a piece of wonderful acting. She gives this look in a swallow, right, like waits until Euron leaves and the door closes after she says, I want to be alone. Really, like, transcendent. Watching it now, they're exchanging looks. He's vamping for a while, and she's just kind of playing with him a little bit, but he's trying to be the coolest. And she's saying, yeah, well, now he's, she says, hit the road, Jack. She doesn't even get up. He's got to stand and be cool. She's just kicking back with her vino. I did think he has a good line. She says, I've done something less to men less than you. He goes, those who are lesser men. We have a couple of moments. There's another face moment when he says, hey, something. And she gives a look. And now she's listening to him leave. She's thinking. Her eyes are moving. Listening. Door closes. True emotion comes in for brief, swallowed seconds. We see some quiet shifts at night. And Super Theon shows up, who I guess I haven't done enough rewatching, but Super Theon shows up, reunites with his sister. They say, to the Iron Islands. And they say, Leon Theon says, well, maybe to Winterfell. And then I was like, weren't you there when we reunited with, or was he in King's Landing for the meeting? I thought he was, but I don't know. Yeah, he definitely was, because, they say to Winterfell, oh yeah, I'm doing it. Then a sad look. Then there's more marching. It's cold in the northern north. Tents. There's tents. And Unite makes a speech about Karstarks and Queen didn't know her great G sound different sound effect. Oh, no, no. Because they're stubborn as goats, and then there's a goat sound effect. That was great. And he also says the proposal is what I'm proposing. Also, a trebuchet's getting made, maybe. And then there's like, oh, bad news versus Averis says nothing lasts. Sister don't like me. Oh, then we have Khaleesi and John talking. Your sister doesn't like me. We don't need to be friends. And then she says, it's time for a dragon ride, Jon Snow. Oh, first we find out the dragons don't like the North. Jon sounds like Sam when he's nervous about the dragon ride. And then this is real Top Gun action. They go showing off. I mean, Jon's like barely hanging on. But they go, they do a dive. This could be, oh, this was the theme park ride. You could have a scent, like pine scent, snow, this cold smell, something else smell, probably like a castle cooking stuff smell. Also, I noticed Khaleesi's maroon belt as she was flying. So they do flyby so everybody could see. Then they land at the, oh boy, the old eight waterfalls of Umbertown. Most famous spot near Winterfell for a kiss. And then the dragons are like, do you know how Bran stares? We're going to stare at you too if you try to kiss. And they say something, you know, some lines like, hey, is it cold out here? We'll warm it up, Chris. And then Jon Snow says, I'm about to. And then we see Gendry working in the forge or something. Arya rolls in with a new thing she wants. Oh, first she says hi to the Hound. They're kind of stunned, awkward. Stay close to that forge, buddy, she says, if you're cold. She kind of wants this, like, blow spear, projectile spear thing. So she has notes for him. Then we have Sansa reading notes from, she says, Glover's out, is staying at Deepwood Mott. And Sansa has to do some truth telling. But she wants the truth too. She says, John, what's up with this? But then we have Jorah and the Khaleesi. They go to talk to Sam to say thanks for saving Jorah, who seems to be back in the Khaleesi's good graces. There's another good line. They say, so you're the man. He goes, which man? And then we have another high acting moment as Sam gets news about old jerkface Tarly and his brother. And Jorah kind of gives these lower eye thing. And it was highlighted by Sam saying, may I break out of here? To which he gets Bran stare number three. Bran's waiting to give him a look. And he says, what are you doing? And Bran says, waiting for old friend, which if you get to watch episode more than once, this is definitely the full circle. I mean, that was great. Like, if you watch the first episode and you had some sort of unfulfilled thing, and then you watch it again, when you hit that moment, you say, okay, I'm fulfilled now. Because it just, I'm not kidding. Like, it makes up the payoff of the episode so good. And he says, time to tell. Now's the time to tell John. Theme park Ned statue. There's a sign in there that says, no selfies. And Sam rolls in like I would. He trips in over everything. John's like lighting candles for his dad or whatever. And they say big hugs. Then he said, were you hiding from me? And Sam says, of course not. Ever declines all the news. John makes a lot of apologies. Sam delivers all the news and about everything, about Jerkface Tarly and about Sam and Khaleesi, or John and Khaleesi being related. More about John being king than saying, you know, you're related. So John makes a lot of apologies. Says I even read the High Septon's diary and branded Brandon things. While they're talking, there's a nice, like, over-the-shoulder shot of the Ned statue. I thought it was good. And then John's like totally speechless. Who will wear the crown? I don't know. Then we have Tormund in the Brotherhood without banners. Old Fire Sword, our friend, who's, you know, the names I can't remember. Actually, I love that guy's name too. Baron von Fire Sword. No, his name starts Baron, not Barum. I think his name's Beric Dondarrion. See, I did remember somebody's name. That other maester, Clyburn. There you go. I just unlocked a part of my brain. So Beric Dondarrion. I guess the other dude, I think he stayed in the north. I remember the guy that looked like, not Jeff Daniels. Anyway, I don't like, I'm getting mixed up, but, so Beric Dondarrion, Tormund and the crew are down looking for stuff. But they're investigating someplace but I guess it was Deepwood Mott or the other place that came up, whatever was at the beginning of the episode, which will come up because I'm going to check the map when I do the facts. Brotherhood, Old Forest, Fire Sword, Tormund give you a frat low meetup with that dude. Tormund gives Fire Sword. He goes, "You go first, bro." But only by look he does that. Then they meet up with the dude whose name I definitely can never remember, who took over the like north. He's like Jon Snow's third best friend or second best. He originally was his third best friend, worked his way up to second after Sam. And I like that guy. He looks a bit like I put something. He reminds me of someone. I want to call him. What name did I always want to call him? Not Sam. Oh, Ned. But I don't think his name is Ned. I think I've been calling him that, though. He's got a pretty good nickname. But they say, oh, the Night King's been here. Left some snacks unfinished. He's on his way. So then there's serious drama because they say, okay, they're between the wall and here. So they're on their way to Winterfell. If we double up on the horses, we might just get there in time. And that goes. So drama gets ratcheted up for next episode. And then we have Winterfell. We see this one. I thought it could have been who it was, but then I was like, is this some sort of something to stir up the pot even more? I mean, I guess the whole episode is more about stirring up all these fans, like what the show is really about, what it's like to try to be an adult. And now these adults that have been on this 8-season journey and dealing with something not easy. See, Sansa, Khaleesi and Jon are a little bit oblivious, I guess, but everybody else says, you want us to just deal with this situation now? I guess Jon's trying to deal with it. They say, why do we have to deal with it? You know, why couldn't you have just been king? Or why can't you just be total king now? What was my point, though? Oh, see, so this dude's on a horse. He's got a hood on. And then he gets off the horse and they say, hello, handsome. Because after his hood comes off, you see that jawline. They say, well, holy mackerel, that's a jaw. Devastating. You know, as they say. See, this guy, he puts the finesse in finesse shampoo. And he puts the HAWT in VO5 hot oil. I said, holy mackerel. He wipes his face off and we get Brandon, number 5 brand look of the episode. You see, Vape City, man, those eyes are only halfway open. It's like maybe the edibles. I don't know what Brand's been up to. But Jamie wipes off his face and Jamie goes, oh dear. That's my handsomeness isn't going to help with this situation. And Bran has his chin up for as spaced out as he is. I noticed his chin was literally up, his posture wise. And his old friend has arrived, the great payoff. It definitely there was the Cersei acting moment, the Sam acting moment, some really good lines. And then just this emotional completion, actually, in some sense. I mean, we'll see how it resolves itself if it does, or it gets addressed, but to get everybody, and I think the voice I'm getting off to talk about this too, about everything's coming full circle, back to where it started at the beginning of the first season. Some Lannisters, I mean, everybody's there but Cersei. That's in, like, I think I'd have to really look at that. And then a lot of new friends, too. I don't know if Lord Breastplate was there. I think he was out in River Run, Baldur's Gate. No, that's really a joke. So that's the episode, and now we'll run through some facts here. So we're going to open with Bad News Bears, just because, like, well, actually, like, a lot of the news wasn't great that got delivered. And I don't know if I looked any of it up, but Bad News Bears, it was a movie that came out in 2005 and 76. American, and I think the 76 version is better, but I haven't watched it in a long time. Sports comedy film, Walter Matthau, Tatum O'Neill. Two sequels, Bad News Bears and Breaking Training, and Bad News Bears Go to Japan. In a 79 to 80 television series, in a 2005 remake. It was original screenplay by Bill Lancaster. Jerry Fielding rewrote kind of some of the themes from the opera Carmen. And the plot, we don't have to go, like, into that, but it's about kids who softball. And let's see. I don't really, like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, let's just see what else. It was, let's see, Tatum O'Neill got $350,000 to be in the movie, plus a percentage of the profits, which were later estimated to be $1.9 million. It was filmed in L.A. Yeah, the field they played, we should do that, the Mason Park in Chatsworth. They were sponsored by a real company, Chico's Bail Bonds. Rotten Tomatoes, this is all from Wikipedia, gives it a score of 97% and an average rating from critics of 7.6 out of 10. Rude, profane, cynical, but honest, unforced humor and a deft, understated performance by Matthau. Ebert gave the film three stars out of four. Scathing look at competition in American society. Siskel gave it 2.5 stars, saying there was more types than real people and didn't like too much foul-mouthed dialogue. Variety called it the funniest adult child comedy since Paper Moon. Let's see what else. I don't know anything about the 2005 remake. I mean, I saw it. Like, the issue was with me was like that the 2005 remake just had too much, the acting was a little bit too much, the kid acting. It's a difficult thing. It was just too polished. It's just the film Bad News Bears, if you want to check it out ever. And if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know one of the great disappointments in my life was my, well, I've only done one, was my first and only mud bath. And I definitely think it was at the wrong place and at the wrong time. But it was definitely like, it was, you know, as a kid, I said, one day I'm going to take a mud bath and then I'll know I've made it and I'm living my best life or whatever people say nowadays. And then when I finally did a mud bath, it was more of like a bark bath. They talked about it. And it was at a resort, and I've talked to other people. It wasn't at a super fancy resort. It was like an old school resort. And it was there with, like, romantically, but they had to, it was a 100% separate experience. So you book it together, and then they have a men's locker room and a woman's locker room. And then it was literally like a bathtub in a men's locker room. And that was only one thing. Like I said, there's no mountains, no picturesque waterfalls, but also it was like, I was literally expecting to be in a mud bog, one. In two, in mud. This was definitely bark and not mud, or, I mean, to me. But see, let's see if there's any notes about it. There really isn't. Mud baths in the U.S. are mostly found in resorts in California and Miami Beach, made of local volcanic ash, Canadian peat. That's right. I was in a peat bath, probably, in naturally heated mineral waters. And that's my problem. I wanted a mud bath, not a peat bath. In Romania, they're famous for mud baths, hypersaline environment. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that's it. I just looked it up on Wikipedia. Yeah, I feel like there was a lot of looks. So I Googled L-E-W-K because I don't know, there's so many looks. I said, what would happen if I Google look, L-E-W-K? In this article from January 6, 2015 on thecut.com, why it's good to have a signature look, L-E-W-K. It's by Veronica Highland, and I'll link to it. My first inkling that a signature look was more than a time-saving gambit came outside a tent at a Somerset House in central London. I was covering, let's see, I'll paraphrase, covering Fashion Week, and Susie Menkes, with her trademark Lupe de Lupe Bouffant, and a number of street style stars, each with their own copyright worthy looks, sailed past. You'd spot them coming and going. Since the era of Coco Chanel, looks have been popular and synonymous with fashion personalities. Let's see, what else do we have here? A word of caution, look is not made overnight. You don't find out who you are unless you work at it. So, I don't know, it's an interesting look. And there's a bunch of, there's a slideshow with different, like it starts off with Karl Lagerfeld, who definitely has a look. But I think it even goes through like Mr. Rogers and Steve Jobs. So I'll link to that article. Okay, we're going to do the lyrics of this song last, but Express Yourself came up, and it's a song by Madonna from her fourth studio album, Like a Prayer, in 89. It was the second single, May 9th, 1989. It was also on her greatest hits collections. And, you know, my daughter, she almost was Madonna for Halloween. Upbeat dance pop song. It's got instrumentation from brass, hand claps, drum beats, chorus backed by saxophone and percussion. And we'll talk about the lyrics. David Fincher did the video, inspired by the Fritz Lang classic Metropolis, with a budget of $5 million, which would be $10 million today. It was it is still the third most expensive video of all time. And it's been performed on four of Madonna's world tours, covered on Glee. And let's see, it has also left the work on a lot of other pop acts. Let's see. The Look of Love from the 87 film soundtrack, Who's That Girl, B-side. Madonna started work on Like a Prayer. She considered many options, including her musical direction. Yeah, but I don't want to talk anything else about the lyrics or anything, because it's a great song. It's just crazy how well it hits. So let's see the critical reception. Express Yourself got mainly positive reviews. Let's see. Stephen Holden of the New York Times observed Madonna repudiated the philosophy of her previous single, Material Girl, and Express Yourself with a more 30-year-old view of life. Karen James declared it one of her most exuberant songs. So just interesting. I mean, the link to it, there's a lot more. A great, great song. All right. So one thing I wanted to do is look at this map, viewersguide.hbo.com. I'll link to it. There's also another map I'll link to. Cause it's just unsure, like with the North, like how they know, why are they definitely coming to Winterfell? And I kind of looked at the map, and if you come from the north, like there's mountains on one side, and then there's a road. So I guess if you have like you'd be coming down the road, and then there's a lot of forests. The last hearth, I think, was where they were, which is between, yeah, which is where Kit Umber's from. And let's see if it has, so that's like one of the towns you'd come through. You know, Molestown, the wall, then you'd come down Molestown, the gift is a swath of land in the north. Then you have Last Hearth, which is the House of Umber. And my worry would be, like, what if this army's, like, cutting around Winterfell? There's Karstarks. Those are there over closer to the water. It looks like they have a lot of woods. There's a big river. Dreadfort, that's where the Boltons live. So that's the other direction they could come. But, you know, the Starks control that. Hornwood. But I guess, like, to get to the south, though, you have to go through Winterfell. Oh, because Moat Cailin, that's all moaty, right? There's a lot of rivers. So I guess the most effective way, depending on how big those rivers are, is you'd come along the mountains and then you'd avoid all the rivers if you're headed south. River Run was the name of that city. I couldn't get right. And then, yeah, eventually it's a long way to King's Landing from up there. And, of course, the Twins is down there, too. So, yeah, so that's a, like, I just wanted to see that. But, yeah, the quartermaster.info is the other one. Now, this is another lyrics, I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor. I definitely associate this song with some, like, places I used to go to in the Bronx, like that and a Meatloaf song, I Gotta Know Right Now, or whatever that one is. Even though it was like 20 years after the original songs came out, I guess it was going through a revival or always just playing in bars. But it came out in 78 originally, tops 14 million since its release sales. It was originally released as a B-side to the cover of Righteous Brothers' song Substitute, but it became a worldwide hit. When disc jockey started playing that song instead, entered the Billboard Hot 100 in December of the year it came out, reached number one. It was a disco. It was unique for its time by virtue of Gaynor's having no background singers. Unlike her first disco hits, the track was not pitched up to make it faster and render her voice higher in register than what she actually sang. Most disco hits at the time were heavily produced with multiple voices, overdubs, and adjustments. They did a 79 a promotional video at Disco Xenon, which was a skater one. One of the skaters from the skating group The Village Wizards was in it. So impact and legacy. It was listed as one of the number one of the 100 greatest dance songs by VH1. Rolling Stone, number two of best disco songs of all time. Daily Telegraph, 48 of the 100 greatest songs of all time. And Pace Magazine put it number seven of the 60 best dance floor classics. And let's see if I can read it in a poetic way so it doesn't come across as a wormy. At first, I was afraid. I was petrified. Just think about how this is reflective of the North. And maybe Jon Snow and the Khaleesi kept thinking, I could never love you without you by my side. This kind of applies to everybody. But then I spent so many nights thinking how you did me wrong. And I grew strong, learned how to get along. Maybe Jamie was singing this as his ride to the North. And so you're back from outer space. Just walked in to find you here with that sad look upon your face. I should have changed that stupid lock. I should have made you leave your key. If I'd known for 1 second you'd be back to bother me. Get out of here. Hit the road. Out the door. Just turn around now. You're not welcome anymore. Weren't you the one who tried to hurt me with goodbye? Did you think I'd crumble? Did you think I'd lay down and go to the big farm? Nope, I'll survive. As long as I know how to love, I know I'll stay alive. I've got all my life to live. I've got all my love to give, and I'll survive. Hey, hey, hey. So that's a little bit from that song. Okay, SAT word for the day is insolent. I-N-S-O-L-E-N-T. Insolent. It's from the French. And this really doesn't give us, this isn't a good dictionary. Insular. I'm not looking for the etymology. to insulate, insulant. Okay, I'm sorry. Like, this isn't a good definition. Okay, here we go. It's showing a rude and arrogant lack of respect. I can use in a sentence. She disliked the insolent tone of his voice. Insolent. I-N-S-O-L-E-N-T. Insolent. So there you go. Or if you're in a spelling competition, probably be in a round pretty early on, I would guess. Okay, Poetic Justice came out, and I wanted to encourage you to see the 1993 film Poetic Justice. It's a John Singleton movie, has Janet Jackson, Tupac, Regina King, and Joe Torre. And, you know, Regina King is, you don't get hotter than her acting right now. So, in the film, the main character, Justice, writes poems, which she recites throughout the film. The poems were written by Maya Angelou, who also appears in the film. Last Poets make an appearance towards the end of the film. It was number one at the box office. It opened with 11.7 mil and grossed over 27 and a half. Janet Jackson received nominations for an Academy Award and Golden Globe for Best Original Song. Kendrick Lamar references it later in Kendrick Lamar's single Poetic Justice, which also samples Janet Jackson's song Anytime, Anyplace. Got mixed reviews, but it's like a sleeper favorite cult film. Let's see what else we got. I don't want to spoil the plot for anybody. Box Office Mojo. Let's see. And it's really, and I don't know if the reviewers are really the best people. I guess a lot of people compared it to Boys in the Hood, which was another Singleton movie. Roger Ebert said, Boys in the Hood was one of the most powerful films of its time. Poetic Justice is not its equal, but doesn't aspire to be. It's a softer, gentler film, more of a romance than a commentary on social conditions. Unwinds like a road picture from the early 70s in which the characters are introduced and set off on a trip that becomes a journey of discovery. A Variety said, though aiming to create a feel for the locale, Singleton periodically loses sight of the audience is unfamiliar with the lingo. Poetic Justice has a lot to commend, but discipline is not high in its list. It holds a 31% on Rotten Tomatoes. But a lot of people consider it one of Singleton's most enduring films. Can't go wrong with Janet Jackson. I think TLC's on there. Tupac, Nate Dogg, Carl Warren G, Tony Tone. So check it out. I mean, I guess I should rewatch it. It's probably been at least 20 years for me. But yeah, check out Poetic Justice. Now, what about trebuchets? They're a French form of a catapult, or that's a French word, a siege engine, which uses a swinging arm to throw a projectile. They started to first appear in China in the 4th century BC, spread westward, adopted by the Byzantines in the 6th century. Using manpower to swing the arm. Later, counterweight trebuchet or counterpoise trebuchet used a counterweight to swing the arm. It's used as a compound machine. This is all from Wikipedia. Mechanical advantage of a lever to throw a projectile. There are large ones made of wood, reinforced with metal, leather, rope, and other materials. Probably be getting used next episode. Long beam attached by an axle suspended high above the ground, stout frame and base, such as a beam can rotate vertically through a wide arc over 180 degrees. A sling is attached to one end of the beam to hold the projectile. The projectile is thrown when the beam is quickly rotated by applying force to the opposite end of the beam. A mechanical advantage is attained primarily by having the projectile end of the beam much longer than the opposite end where the force is applied, usually 4 to 6 times longer. Powered by gravity, potential energy is stored by slowly raising an extremely heavy box. filled with weights attached by a hinge connection to the shorter end of the beam and releasing it on command. Traction trebuchets are human-powered. On command, men pull ropes attached to the shorter end of the trebuchet beam. The difficulties of coordinating the pull makes counterweight ones better, especially for larger ones, but they're more complicated to engineer. Further increasing their complexity is that winches or tread wheels aided by block and tackle are required to raise the bigger counterweights. So while counterweight ones have fewer people to operate, they take more time to reload, and long siege reload time can be critical. When it's loose, the force causes rotational acceleration of the beam around the axle, the fulcrum of the lever. And these factors multiply the acceleration transmitted to the throwing portion of the beam and its attached sling. The sling starts rotating with the beam but rotates further and therefore faster, transmitting this increased speed to the projectile. And that's how it works. Terminology, we don't need that. Hybrids, it looks like they're building a counterweight one. Once it started, you know, using firework-y type stuff, they got, now they're mostly used to, like, on, you know, TV shows, throwing pumpkins, and that kind of thing. So, yeah, but we'll see one on the next episode for sure. And then we'll close out the poem. Come on, girls, do you believe in love? Because I've got something to say about it, and it goes a little something like this. Don't go forsaken, best baby. Put your love to the test. You know you've got to make him express how he feels, and then you'll know your love is real. This is by Madonna, by the way. You don't need diamond rings or 18-karat gold. Fancy cars that go very fast, you know, they never last, no. What you need is a big, strong hand to lift you to a higher ground, make you feel like a queen on a throne, make him love you till you can't come down. Don't go for second best, baby. Put your love to the test, you know. You know you gotta make him express how he feels, and then he'll know the love is real. Long stem roses are the way to your heart, but he needs to start with your head. Satin sheets are very romantic. What happens when you're not there? You deserve the best in life, so if the time isn't right, then move on. Second best is never enough. You'll do much better, baby, on your own. So again, don't go for second best, baby. Put your love to the test, you know? You know you gotta make him express how he feels, and then you know your love is real. Express yourself. You got to make him express himself. Hey. So if you want it right now, make him show you how. Express what he's got, baby, ready or not. And when you're gone, he might regret it. Think about the love he once had. Try to carry on, but he won't get it. He'll be back on his knees to express himself. You got to make him express himself. Hey. So it's just a little bit about what came up in the episode. Thanks. Hello. My name is Tom, and you may know me as Mikey, but my real name is Tom, and I'm here to tell you a tale with my best friend, Sir Pounce. The Podman said I could go right into our tales, which will be an ongoing, as my Podman says, episodically serial modular series. Which I'll tell you about soon. But I'm Tommen. You may remember me from such roles as Your Grace, Your Lord, first of his name, and many, you know, many other important roles I've filled. You know, things that my mother would say, stop your sniveling. I did it. You know, that is a role I filled. Tommen, what do you keep staring at? Endless, close your mouth. Those roles are other roles I've filled with, but the role I'm most proud of is best friend. I'm a best friend to the greatest cat who's ever lived, the greatest friend who's ever been a cat, and the greatest cat who's ever been a friend, one Sir Pounce. From the fateful day Sapounce came into my life, and we looked one another in the eyes, and Sapounce turned away, then looked back, then walked away, then pawed my bed and flicked Sapounce's tail, then jumped off the bed, and I wondered, where are you going? You're supposed to be my cat and best friend. And then returned eventually and looked at me again, then took a bath slowly in a manner that I attempted to replicate and mother was not pleased with when I licked my hands. And I said, I'm giving myself a bath. That's what I'm doing, mother. You know, not in the throne. Put your robes on. I'm bathing myself like Sapounce, mother. I lick my hands and then wash myself with my hands. That's how Sapounce stays so clean. But those days are behind me with mother in her things, but with friendship and best friendship, the greatest friendship. And I've learned this is a term I've learned mammals have ever known. And beyond, you know, there is no friendship beyond mammals that I've heard about. You mammals are doing a great job with befriending. Is just Sapounce and I. So I just wanted that to be clear. This is a tale of our adventures. As always, there is tales. And these particular adventures take place. It's Sir Tommen and Sapounce. And in the world of Noir Chardonnay. Out there, there's a world where the lights are turned down. There's sepia tones. And music playing on a trumpet or a saxophone. And there, in a fedora cap, is Sir Tommen, and at his side, trusty friend Sapounce. The two of them are gumshoes, and they make their way in the world, a world inhabited by another friend they have, Noir Chardonnay, who is so popular in Noir Chardonnays is that the world is also influenced by Noir Chardonnay. Oh, Noir. It is a world where it's rainy and misty, where neon signs reflect in the puddles in the streets, and where around every turn, the actual thing is not that different than Westeros. Around every turn is a vagabond or a person in need of something. And if something, in this case, of a hero or two with six legs, Sapounce and Tommen. And it was one day we had an office in the nightclub run by Noir Chardonnay called Noir Chardonnay. In the back was our office where we would hang, listen to the music, wait for Noir Chardonnay to come. And Noir Chardonnay would say, make sure to call me by Noir Chardonnay or they, not Scooter. But they don't have a speaking role, so it does not matter. For the world, Noir Chardonnay was a great entertainer and influence of fashion. This is the part that the Podman wrote. Of fashion and style, a trendsetter and a trend breaker, that was Noir Chardonnay. But for me, and Sapounce, just a wise sage friend. And it was there where Sapounce and I were sitting, enjoying the atmosphere and thinking, when the door to my office opened and someone entered, someone vaguely familiar. I didn't know if they were from my past or my present or my future. And I said, how you doing? What are we doing you for? And she said, I'm here are you Tommen and Pounce? It's been too long. And I said, what do you call yourself? We're here. What do you need? Are you in need of a crate case? You got something for us? And they said, my name's Mizella. And yeah, I've lost
I never appreciated the best friendship I had. And I've come to, you know, help you cross over the final threshold to adult. And I said, I'm here to solve cases, not cross thresholds to adulthood. And they said, I think someone's moving pieces like chess pieces. I feel like I would have wanted to be your best friend, and I tried to be kind to you, a sister. And I said, you're talking in metaphors is our game, right, Sir Pounce? Meow. And Sir Pounce meowed in the way I just did, but more with a meow, say. Except I did that part. And she went on talking about sibling rivalry and appreciation of a brother somewhat difficult of, she said, simple of something. And I said, anyway, what, you know, let's get down to brass tacks, eh? Originally, when I started doing the voice, I had to keep something in my mouth to be able to do, oh, sorry to break. But now I can do it of natural, so much rehearsals it is. And I said, why don't we take a walk, you, I, and Sir Pounce. This is Sir Pounce, my best friend and cat. Sounds like you've been through a lot. She said, oh, yes, I have. I've been through a lot. You know, I wish, you know, and I said, you need to talk in stories here. You know, you're talking directly to me, and you're breaking my cover. This is a world of noir Chardonnay. And she said, I said, maybe do it like Once Upon a Time. And she said, once upon a time, there was a girl named Mazella. And she was born into an aristocracy that was also in the world. She said, do you watch The Good Place? And I said, I do. Oh, my goodness, I do. I love it. And I said, what do you mean? Is that on the tube? That's for suckers. But she said pandemonium, and I said, oh, Jason is my favorite character. He makes me laugh so much. But also Derek, I see Derek, and I say, is that, do I know you? When I, okay, so I said, oh, interesting pandemonium, and a bit of a not easy times. And then we walked down a street lined with shops, Sir Pounce walking ahead of us exactly 5.5 paces. A slow, slinky walk to help us time our walk. And I took the lead as Sir Pounce turned and looked in a window of a store, a department store, lining the city streets. The city, you know, that has a thousand tales to tell. So then Sir Pounce, you know, moved to Sir Pounce, but this was only one tale, but Sir Pounce's tale was moving. And we looked in the shop window, and there in the shop window was everything I needed to solve this one. For it was a very nice close, a living room scene, a fireplace. And mannequins, but they only had, they were just mannequin torsos and bodies and arms, but no, like, they may have dealt with my mother. These mannequins may have met my mother at some point. But they were standing there in the room. But on one side of the room was a bigger, grander character who we could say was a king-like character once upon a time with a good glass of wine and a turkey stick in his hand. So I told Mazella as I was, you know, using it. You know, this is partially real, partially true. And next to him was a young boy, about, you know, 5 or 6, and then a girl about 9 or 11, and they seemed to be having a gregarious time with this king-like character who had he didn't have a big grin on his face, you could see it. He was friendly but unpredictable. Then on the other side of the room was a like a young boy sitting there staring at the tube, with his arms crossed, maybe of age of 11 or 12. Looked like he had eaten something that made him, he made his face make a puckery face. And he was taking everything in and judging it and calculating. And just, as I've learned in new terms, I would say he was infantile. Though many people would throw that term right at me, and I'd say, hey, I'm here, but let's get back to the story, say. And so that boy was sitting there and standing behind him, not far in, taking it in with two other adults, a man and a woman. And if you took time to look at it, you'd say they were standing within each other's personal bubbles. And you could even, if you took a little bit of time, say their elbows were touching on purpose. And they were both looking at the room in a calculating way, a detached way. And the Marcella said, I don't understand what this scene is supposed to tell me. I recognize it. Don't get me wrong. And I'd say, yes, yes, Mozilla, you do understand. But you haven't, I said, this, according to Noir Chardonnay, these clothes, this is not a nuclear family in some sense, but it is one striving to achieve the nuclearity of the statistical average family. Mazzello looked at me confused, and I looked at myself confused. But I said, Sir Pounce, let us hear, because yesterday we were walking with Noir Chardonnay, and they said, this is the past, they say it with their Z's sometimes. And I said, what do you mean? I like that sweater. It has a zipper on it. And Noir Chardonnay said, this is yesterday, all of this, all of these things. And not the future, none of it. And she was talking, I think, about the clothes and the dynamics. And maybe this laughing king in charge, but a bit of a buffoon. And I don't know, Mazzella, but something about that made me feel calm, made me feel good. Maybe it was knowing that one day I'd be cracking cases, see? And maybe it was the fact that Sir Pounce jumped in my arms at that moment. I said, oh, Sir Pounce just jumped in your arms, Mazzella, to get a better look at the past and say, oh, that time is no more. We don't need to even dig deeper into that one. But to know... you and I are looking in the window from the outside in another world, a special world of Noir Chardonnay, yeah? And I want to introduce you, Mazzella. I think we should go and maybe you could, partake of this world and enjoy it as you. And maybe go on a journey that I've been lucky enough to go on. You know, your own journey separate from me, because I am nearly, only mostly dependent being now, you see. So you could go meet Noir Chardonnay, maybe get a job waxing glasses, So I want that for you. And it's good to see, but go ahead and pet Sir Pounce. And that's a hard day here in the big city. Mazzella. He's going to get a job at Noir Chardonnay's, and I'm going to go back to the office with Sir Pounce and wait for the next case. Good night.
Okay, if you're new to the show or something, this is where I talk to the gods, old and new, and new gods and this is my first time in like 18, 19, 20 months praying to them, unfortunately. Between you and me, so it would be a little bit, the first prayer of the year, and probably last year too. But just between me and me, and you, just between us humans. Okay, here we go. Crone, Miller, Smith, Barkey, a jester, hound dog god, maiden, you know, other gods that are listening in. Definitely not need, you know, DRON, got, you know, water, you know, whatever the positive version of the Aquarius god is, a pool float, a pool noodle. Maybe there is, anyway, gods, it's me. It's been a while, I know. Hopefully, you know, I've been bringing you amusement with my human, you know, human being, human stuff, just human and around. Sorry, I fell out of touch, gods. I never know how to handle this. Crone, sweet, sweet crone. Miller Smith, Barky Jester. I guess I should just say I'm sorry. I was wrong. And I forget the other parts of the apology. I'm sorry. I was wrong. There's another part. What can I do to fix it, gods? I mean, I can make the most of the next 6.5 weeks or whatever we have between us. And so I don't know if I should make it. I don't know how we, what do we do? Maybe that's why I've been avoiding talking to you, by forgetting about it and not having it be a priority. I had said to myself, Scooch, you got to get ready. Sweet, sweet crone is, how are you going to keep her in your life if she wishes, you know, it to be, how to let the sweet, sweet crone fall off of my radar? The miller, the grinder of grains, maybe that's what I should do, guys, is reintroduce you, because there are people that just know about the, you know, the glory, no offense to other gods, again, by me promoting other gods, it doesn't, or saying things about you, it doesn't take away from your godliness. Here's the question, Crone. I don't know if I've brought this up. Have you ever had goddess dressing on anything? And what's the difference between that and green goddess dressing? Okay, so yeah, I guess you're right. Crone, you're so wise at telling me that, because this is a podcast, and, you know, maybe people are listening and we're here to comfort them, that it would help them know for this first episode who you are, and of course why I dedicate my time to praising you as opposed to the glory gods. That's what I was going to say. Like the mother, the father, the warrior, and, you know, maiden, you know, like pretty, you know, the maiden who, you know, I have, you know, I don't really think about at all, except, you know, sometimes when I'm writing poetry and, you know, enjoying summer breeze, so, or, you know, sometimes I kiss my body. Anyway, maiden, don't worry about it. I'm here talking to the crone, sweet, sweet crone, Miller Smith, Barky Jester, and Hound Dog God. So, yeah, let's introduce the lineup and let's let the people know why would I apologize and be wrong and try to make it up to you by talking about some of your positive attributes. We have the crone, first off, the sweet, sweet crone, as I like to call her, already given a name, probably in a way, you know, possibly given the name Crone by someone, you know, look, that didn't think to, you know, that wanted to not accentuate the positive parts of the Crone. All knowing, all, you know, the Crone, always judging. That's one of the things we always think about the Crone. Always correcting. It generally, it, just for me, I don't know about other praisers of you, Crone, you know, generally disappointed. You got high standards. You wouldn't be the crone. You wouldn't be at the top of my list if you didn't. Keeper of bunions, smelling like onions, the crone. You know, crone, I'm just kidding with that part. I don't think crone, if you're all seeing, do you know when I'm joking and when I'm serious, the humor is based in truth? Sorry, crone. The crone is the god with the most experience, and that means that she's seen it all. except she's like, here's, I guess, Corona. I never realized how you were building my esteem. You've seen it all, yet I can still make you sigh. What does that say about me? You know, if you've seen the entire universe and you could still roll your eyes at me, you put your hand on your hip in that way that says, and see that crease between your eyes, that cosmic crease, oh, crone. I think I was starting, though, to say, you know, if you're looking for a guy that's unappreciated, that's misunderstood, they say don't judge a god by its book cover or by, you know, its appearance, or by your projection of a cosmic ether into a being to be praised. I would say all those things are true. Because the crone is also, you know, teaches me humility, too, to say, well, I don't know everything. I think I do. The crone does. Crone's been around. Actually, if it wasn't for you, who would, you know, how would we grow and make apologies? But mostly, Crone, I'm just glad to be back in your good, you know, what I love doing is getting in your good graces and falling right out of them. Or, oh, I've never been in your good graces. Well, that's, you know, one day I will be, Crone. Because you're so sweet. I think when I say sweet, sweet crone, there's a millisecond where I am in your good graces, sweet, sweet crone. So that's a crone, everybody. There's also, you know, other belief systems that believe in the crone. Some of you might be in disbelief that there is a goddess or being, a supreme being called the crone. There is, just so you know. Next up, a god that, isn't in the beginning or the end of any shows. Maybe isn't even in the, you know, books or whatever, according to experts. It's God we all rely on. It's the Miller. And the Miller's one of those two gods back to back here that's toiling away there. You wonder, you know, where, you know, who said, who first to a human or developing, you know, evolutionary stuff. Well, let's eat that grain and see how it tastes. That was the Miller. Let's grind that grain and see what we could make of it. That was the Miller. And the other side is the Miller's got to do a lot of work to keep us working. I don't think hard work is always comes naturally to us, but it comes naturally to Miller. Grinding away, toiling away, milling. I've seen the sign on the Miller's house that says, You won't catch me chilling. You'll just catch me milling. And even if I'm illing, I'll still be milling. That's Miller. Now, a lot of gods don't like to talk about it because, you know, gods, they just eat ambrosia or drink it or whatever. And you get, like, mess around with Cupid-like situations. But, the Miller's down here with us, really, or nearby. Miller also likes to see us work because it's, built in the likeness of the Miller, working in the likeness. So Miller appreciates all of us out there, you know, trying to get a good night's sleep to go to work, to put milled stuff on our table, whether it's, you know, kind of milled, metaphorically milled, or how, you know, maybe you're milling your coffee in the morning. The Miller's there looking over you, smiling and saying, you know, I'm one of the only two guys that's working 24/7 without any things, and let me throw it over the other guy that works really hard, the Smith. Oh, Smith, forger, what do you call that? Fluing of forges and, pumping out, wear of apron. Oh, resplendent in that apron, that cosmic, have I already used cosmic? I have, I guess. Sorry, Miller. Oh, sorry. Oh, boy. Smith, sorry about that. I know the Miller would probably have a cloth apron and you would have a leather apron. Of course, I knew that, Smith. Really good. Pumping the bellows. That's what I was thinking. That's what I was picturing you doing.
you who sweat in a different way than the miller, but still you sweat here among us. You that, you know, help me forge my things, you know, bonder of metals, you know, banger of steels. You're the one who, you know, you're the one who teaches us about alloys and saying, and also the idea that, you know, we could be, not to be brittle, right? Oh boy, Smith, that it's the work and the heart, you know, some things, you know, some, when you say it's pounding or whatever, it's too hot. Maybe that's the Smith behind the scenes working so hard to make sure we're there. So thank you, Smith. Sorry, I got to keep moving, though. Miller Smith. Let me, Barky, I'll save you for last. Jester, you were once among us in one of the seasons. You've been, you know, the actor that portrayed you has had great success since then. He really is a heartthrob, in my opinion, and you are too. And you know that the throbbing of the heart is sometimes the purest when we're laughing, oh jester. And you also, you know, keep, you say that, you know, sometimes just being you is hilarious to other people. You know, when we're dropping food or we're dropping jokes, it's because you have shown the way, oh jester. And I want to thank you for that and for, you know, keeping me laughing at myself and say, you know, because sometimes, you know, we do take things so seriously. And you help balance out the wisdom of the Chrome. Chrome, do you use Chrome, the Chrome browser? Or Smith, did you work with Chrome? Chrome, I heard Chrome's the worst to work with. Sorry, Jester, I'm back. I just want to say thanks for balancing stuff out. A hound dog god, you're not, like, I guess you're in both worlds now. You've returned to Earth, or Westeros, I guess that's not Earth. And you're back, or you've been back for a while. I don't know how I left things with you, but I still think you haggard like a hound dog. You know, is a hang dog look like a hound dog look, hound dog god? You were a god, they say, I invented, just like a lot of the other ones. Mostly that was the father, mother, and warrior. Because they those are the gods that know, they think they know everything, unlike the crone who does. But hound dog god, I just wanted to thank you for being in both worlds. You know, keep an eye on us. You know, helping out where you could. You know, try, you know, saying, where's my place in the world? You know, my place is with... I think your place, well, we'll see where, I mean, I'm hoping, you know, where your place is going to be soon. But I like seeing you, and I've always been a fan of yours, Hound Dog God. Okay, who's next? Whom is next is what I should have said, excuse me, is Barky. Oh, Barky. Oh, how I've missed you. Barky, you know, the North is going to probably be a centerpiece of this season that I haven't seen yet. And there's been a lot of trees that we've seen recently, you know, but you are the wisest of the trees. You're the oldest of the old gods. You know why the one-eyed raven is oh so raven. And you know what we don't know, but probably about Bran and stuff. And you still say, I'm a tree. You also probably know about Groot, and maybe you saw the new movie I left out for you. That again was a rental that I was hoping to get back so I could return it because that one was from Redbox, so they're still charging me, Barky. But, you know, Groot was going through those tween years, which maybe was confusing to you. And I don't know, because I didn't read anything on the internet. The theories, is this a Groot or a new Groot? But I don't know, Barky. So, but you're the god, you know, that's got branches everywhere. You got the roots in the earth and your fingers in the sky.
Your trunk stands between the heavens and the land we walk upon. You shield us from the sun and the rain, oh Barky. Barky, you just make me laugh. You think the jester, but whenever I say Barky, I just feel good. And I do think about, you know, hugging a tree. I don't know when that became a pejorative, because I think hugging a tree is pretty darn great. And it's also not easy. I think people act like, oh, it's so easy to hug a tree. Well, there's not a lot of, not every tree you can wrap your arms around, first off. Second off, have you felt bark? It's not, you know, it's nice, Barky, but it's more feeling the spirit of the tree, right? I guess that's what they mean when they say tree hugger, but I mean giving a hug to hugging a tree, which is, Barky, you know, I'm giving you a hug from my heart right now. Here's the thing, Barky. I don't know if I've kissed a tree. I probably have. This is just an imagination. I think the first tree I would like to kiss would be a cherry tree. Just because I like something about the bark on a cherry tree. Maybe it's because it's got, first off, Barky, is there reddish bark on a cherry tree? Because if so, I'd like to kiss a cherry tree. But here's another question, Barky. Do squirrels go number one in trees? Because that'd be good to know. But I'd like to hug and kiss a tree. Just a platonic. Out of the joy of love, Barky, for you. The tree that, everyone adores, Barky. And we got 6 weeks together, gods, I think, coming up here. It's been my pleasure to be with you. I'll talk to you in a week or less. And then hopefully now the listeners have a general idea. They're probably more, hopefully they're relaxed or they slept. But they know they could say Barky and feel good. They know that the hound dog, God, walks in both worlds, just like us, sometimes shoulders slumped and confused. They know that the jester's dancing around in a gold robe, laughing and being witty, and that's always something cool to know about. They know that Smith and the Miller are working hard. Not hard. There's never been a time they've been hardly working. So that's good. And they're the two gods that can relate, right, Miller and Smith? Not so much. Well, you know, they can relate to our hard work here. And then the crone, sweet, sweet crone. You know, oldest of the old gods, but in the best possible way. Between you and Barky Crone, that's why I end and start with you two. The god that I love the god I'm closest to, Crone, you know that's true. And the last god I say I'm sorry to, Crone. Crone, sweet, sweet Crone, I missed you so. Maybe I could carry you with you beyond this season. Our relationship, especially if you could start giving me some foresight, that would be sweet. Not that I'm holding out, Crone, but just be great. You know, my praise, I know that people don't say this because it's not polite, but it'd be nice if my praise was getting me somewhere. Oh, but that's just a human in me talking. So fallible, Crone. You know that later my clothes will be covered in food that I spilled on me, and you and Jester will be having a laugh. And I did it for you, Crone. Oh, Crone, sweet, sweet Crone, Miller, Smith, Barky, Jester, Hound Dog, God, good night.
All right, I want to thank everybody that reviewed the show for an Apple Podcast. DLR 92 says, brilliant and actually works. Been using this podcast for 3 years. And never got to the end of episode without falling asleep. Talks nonsense, sends me to sleep. Highly recommended. A G to the B to the A to the double R 13. Incredible. So weird. So effective. So incredible. So weird. So effective. I actually got excited when I get in bed. That's my goal. And turn this on every night. I can't believe it exists and it's effective. It's perfect. That's from Chasm. Gazoom, I said, thank you so much to my favorite podcast, Z's. Judy Blue with a U, like the cheese. Oh, no, wait, is blue cheese with a U? I don't know. Yeah, but they love the podcast, so I hope I set it up and play it all night. Oh, they're having an issue with their podcast app, so I'd try updating it, though answering it in the, thank you, surprising. Probably doesn't do you any good, but, yeah, if you're having an issue with the app hanging, I would try a new app or to update your current app or unsubscribe, search, and resubscribe. Miss Marmar says, gets me asleep even when it's not on. Only listen for a few weeks. Scooter's voice is permanently in my head now, along with the jingles. I love that part. I don't know the words to jingle, but I lay down for a nap and I find it in my head and then I fall asleep. I love it. Pippi Cat with two T's says, you're my favorite podcaster. Oh, thanks. Have reviewed it for before, but have additional comments. I had been listening to you in the morning as I get ready for work and on my breaks when I feel stressed and during my evening chores. This in addition to bedtime, helping me stay calm at night. Oh, thanks, Pippi Cat. Yasaloopy says, thank you. I was so desperate when I discovered this podcast. 3 a.m. Couldn't shut my brain down. I was looking for sleeping sounds like rain, but this was popped up and wow. Push play. I was asleep in 10 minutes. Sleep. Thanks for the podcast. Appreciate it. Good Anne says, where have you been all my life? Hilarious, brilliant, sometimes and somehow boring, changing my life. Struggle to fall asleep. Can't stop the whirlwind of thoughts that hijack my brain. To borrow my brain when I put my head on my pillow. But this guy stops my mind from being like one word to another to form an anxious thought. Just now I started an episode. I'm fairly certain this review won't make sense. Something about tabby cats and trapper keepers. Don't know, don't care. I'm almost asleep. Good night. And YOLO Zoe XOXO says love. Love Scoots and the content. Puts me to sleep every time. Captivating, but just captivating enough to put your mind at ease and let you slip off to sleep. I always find myself wanting to listen every word, but not to the point where I stress out if I don't. Perfect. One in a million. Thanks. Thank you, YOLO. And then the comments over in CastBox. Let's see. Princess says, used to take a very long time to fall asleep. Scoots helped me fall asleep almost instantly. Thank you. K-H-A-Apart says, first show of yours I listened to, and I'm laughing because you're trying to mispronounce, you're trying to pronounce canon about man. Manny talks about the holy gargling. Indica says, can I have the link for the toothbrush, please? Zach with an X and a K, listen to live on the podcast, play them all night. Bam said, any room under the blanket. Stephanie says, it's like a warm blanket. Thank you. Original Jim likes this Sleep With Me and Carl Pilkington, you know, Ricky Gervais episode podcast. That's what I first started listening to. Oh, Jonathan C. said, Cannaba. Thanks. That's Cannaba. Everybody's laughing. PJ Quarterly. Oh, that's one of my favorite magazines, PJ Quarterly. Anyway, thanks everybody for sort of reviewing the show on Apple Podcasts and commenting on CastBox. I really appreciate it. That's how Sleep With Me grows, actually, is people just sharing their honest experience with the show. So thank you for that. Sleep With Me exists because of direct listener action. Listeners who support the show on Patreon and support our sponsors allow the show to be out here in the world for free. So thanks everybody for that. We're a proud member of Night Vale Presents, and two amazing Night Vale Presents shows just finished their first seasons. You can check them both out at nightvalepresents.com, and you should listen to them. Search for them in this podcast app you're listening to right now. Adventures in New America and Dream Boy. Now these are both grown-up podcasts, but that's like, believe me, they're worth your ear space for the daytime. You can check out Adventures in New America and Dream Boy and wherever you consume your podcasts or at knifehellpresents.com, along with all the other amazing shows. We're also a member of PRX. You can see everything they're doing at prx.org. And that's it. I just want to thank you for listening and say goodnight.
All right, everybody, this is Scooter. This is Weeks in Review, and this is where I run through my Weeks in Review stuff. What was on Sleep With Me Plus in the past month, and what you can expect to see on in the public feed too. Now, I have if you sign up for Sleep With Me Plus, or you're already signed up for Sleep With Me Plus, I highly recommend using a podcast app that allows search within the feeds, but using just one podcast app for Sleep With Me Plus content only, and then keeping your other podcasts, your daytime podcasts, and whatever app you use now. And I would just check out a couple podcast apps you could choose from on Apple are Overcasts, iCatcher, Pocket Casts, and on Android you could try out Pocket Casts or Podcast Addict. For this example, I have the only thing I have in my app is I think this is the 10 to I think this is the Boyfriends level. I have four podcasts, the ad-free full episodes, the story only episodes. Nothing in Sleep With Me Plus has ads except for the really old episodes in the archives. We got the story only versions of the show, the all intro, all night versions of the show, and then the bonus episodes. So let's start with the bonus episodes, actually. So Saturday, a new Posty episode came out. It was one that Russell loved, and that came out, and that's in the bonus feed. You know, some people like listening to the Posty Super Deluxe episodes during the day. Some people sleep to them. And, yeah, so that one is in the bonus feed. And then looks like we got a bonus coming out for Boar Besties and Boar Friends on Thursday of this week, which is April 15th when I'm recording this. And then we have another Posty Super Deluxe came out a couple weeks ago. That was a picnic lunch with Scooter. And that's in the bonus feed. And that makes just so much easier for those of you that don't like automate your playlist or anything, just to kind of build and choose how you want to listen. Let's pop into all intro, all night episodes. I know an all intro episode is coming out this Thursday. Last Thursday was Make Great Pets Season 1 Part 2, almost 6 hours. It's about the max length we can get and have a good file size. So that was like 7 episodes of Make Great Pets. April 3rd, an all intro episode came out. And then we had... March is at bonus episodes. There was another all intro episode. So that's in the all intro all night feed. And again, like so much easier, like these all intros. Is that what everything that's in there? 277 episodes split between all in. So if you love all intros, I bet 200 of those are all intros, maybe even more. And then in the store, both in the story only episode feed and then in the all ad free feed. Let's run through the new episodes. Bring It On week started last week. So we had 12:54 was our first watch along where I watched half of the movie Bring It On. Wednesday was 12:53, Ben Broughton, the Crayon Rambler. That was one of those episodes that had an intro that I said I should make an episode based on this intro. Went to make an episode based on the intro, and it went in an even another direction of what if there was an RPG game based on the movie Bring It On, which led me to figure out I never watched Bring It On. Let me learn more. Then I ended up watching Bring It On. Then April 7th was Alba Sabelix, like we're getting ready, big announcement if I haven't made it anywhere. We're going to do 3 seasons of a crossover with Alba Salix. So that's cool. So, that's something we're looking forward to doing. And, that was episode 1 of that. That was the one we did originally. Then 12:52 was the finale of The Great British Bake Off. and episode 10. Then Multiplex 5, Tiki Transistor Hut. That was a good one. 1250, one of my favorite episodes probably in the past few years, a Wildy Wonka tour that came out of like some news articles about the experience. And I said, this has got to be an episode. And that will be a series. I mean, like a recurring thing. Then Great British Bake Off, episode 9, Patissier. Then Multiplex episode 4. And then we're back to our last audio news. So it's everything. And again, if you ever need support, support at supercast.com is there to help you. So if you're listening to this episode, I'm assuming you're not like, you don't need support. But if you do, and the other thing is like, yeah, these this is my main way to communicate. I learned this on Patreon. Most people just don't read their emails from Supercast or from me, and most people aren't on our Discord or follow our social media. And so these messages are how the majority of supporters get their information. I do it in a sleepy voice because there's like, I put it in at the end of the free show too. But this is a kind of key way, but these episodes are easy to skip, especially if you're just using one podcast app, right, and building your playlists from that podcast app. So, yeah, thanks, everybody, for supporting the show. Reach out if you have any feedback. Feedback at sleepingmepodcast.com. If you need support, support at supercast.com. And good night.